So,
I was trying to find, like, stuff, but I don't think I did a good job, because I thought I was going to find more than I found, so... And well, I think I at mean, some point I just kind of gave up, because I was like... Yeah. I was sitting there going, I swear there was more promotional stuff about these kind of stories, but you know, for me, it's... I'm just operating on, you know, member berries and nostalgia bullshit with you with this, because that's why I was
did,
like...
You
I was
did
like,
find
ooh.
Some stuff, though, so that's cool. I dug up a few things as well, mostly... My main resource when it comes to that sort of thing is Amazing Heroes, because not only do I have a lot of those personally, since I was very fond of that magazine, but also you've got them online through various outlets as well.
Yeah.
So just pouring through there and finding little blurbs here and there and little bits of information. What I did is while I was looking through the stuff, I basically record something solo that I could just drop in as a little like factoid in the midst of things. So there's some stuff about the production and all that kind of good stuff. The earlier episodes of the podcast have focused more on like a lot of behind the scenes stuff and talking about the movies and all that kind of thing, but the goal was never for it to be about that. The goal was really for it to be about the comics themselves. I'm very much on guard about Mission Creep. I tried to do the Dawn of the Dead podcast, and I'm desperately want to get back to that, especially because, God willing, I'm still struggling with whether or not this is going to happen or not, because there's a Texas Frightmare Weekend is coming up in September, and they've been deferring that since, I think, May of last year. And, you know, I'm fully vaccinated. In fact, with any luck, I'll have gotten my booster before the convention, but I'm still afraid, because I've managed to go this long without getting sick. At the same time, I've been deferring this for a year and a half, and Ken Foree is going to be at that show, and Tom Savini is going to be at that show. And it's like, Ken Foree is not a young man, and I keep thinking, you know, if this guy got sick and died, and I didn't meet him when I had the chance, because I talked about it in one of the previous podcasts, thank God I got to meet Bill Paxton before he passed, because that was I don't really do the whole, I don't do signatures, I don't usually go up and do the celebrity things. I certainly don't typically pay to do the celebrity things, but you know, Aliens was a special circumstance, and you know, having had the opportunity to meet the guy and see what a great dude he was and really enjoy, you know, that little bit of time for somebody that I've been a fan of most of my life, and then for him to like die the following year, it's like, I'm just so glad I had that opportunity and I didn't miss it, because I'd have been fucking kicking myself if I had.
And I mean, you can still be on guard when you go. I mean, you know, I don't know, I always maybe my methodology is a little whack, but I mean, I was always, like, even as far back as the first Heroes Con we all went to, I had my crazy methodology, because I hated con funk and all that bullshit that it would always come up. So, I mean, I was always, like, Listerine and self-medicating and gargling.
I usually have Benaco on me or stuff like that.
All that kind of stuff. Just not because I am sick, but just because, like, I'm like, dude, this is like, I'm anticipating that something's going to try to sneak its way in, and I'm just gonna, you know, freaking block that shit before it even comes to the front door, you know, like, that was always my attitude about it, because I always hated when you would, you know, get that whole con funk thing or whatever it was, you know, so it was like that, I never liked that, so.
Yeah. Well, you reminded me too. You'd think I'd have kicked myself over this, but Mac and Fix It, when Stan Lee was in town, they went up and talked to him briefly, and he didn't do handshakes anymore because, again, he was afraid of getting sick. He was quite an old guy by that point, so he just did fist bumps, which was a smart thing. And obviously, he was ahead of his time, because now we're all doing like the little elbow things if we touch each other at all. So obviously, both you and Stan have a better game plan than the rest of us. But for some reason, I didn't feel the need to meet Stan. And I'm a guy who defends Stan against a lot of people that attack him. But at the same time, there was a part of me that just was like, I don't know that I want to go there, you know? And I'm not really sorry that I missed him, you know, which is weird, I know. But it's weird who I was concerned about, who I wasn't concerned about. I'm not sorry that I missed Stan, although before he died, he was going to do a show in, I think, like New Orleans or something. And I'd seriously considered going to that show, because I'd gotten a bunch of questions together that I was going to try to ask him. about the romance comics, like the Patsy Walker and shit, stuff that nobody ever asks him. And I wanted to know. So I was like, okay, I finally have a reason to talk to Stan Lee, because there's no way these questions are ever going to get answered otherwise. And of course, knowing Stan, he would have probably not remembered a damn thing and, you know, just said, oh, gosh darn, True Believer, it slipped my mind, or just bullshit me. But unfortunately, he ended up passing before then. But I was fine just being in the outer orbit and seeing my friends do it and see how happy they were to do it. So,
well, it was such, for me, like, I did the Stanley thing, but it was such a wham bam, thank you, ma'am, like thing. Like, there wasn't anything to it. It was, I mean, mainly I stood in line forever and then took a picture that lasted all of like 10 seconds. But I mean, I've got it. Like, so that's that, you know, it's like that's what it was about, really. I mean,
right.
I did get Shatner's autograph at the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then that was nice, just because, mm-hmm. you know, it was a little longer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he was super like professional. I thought he was cool, because there was like a kid that was, I don't even know how to describe it, but basically it was like, it wasn't like he was in a bubble, but it was like he was in a wheelchair bubble or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, you could see Shatner saw the kid like five people ahead, you know, in front, like, and totally prepped himself for when, you know, the kid arrived and everything. And mm-hmm. he was like super sweet, super nice, and like, it was like it didn't even faze him. Like, he was just super duper like professional and everything. And I know, even my first impression was when I saw the kid, like, there, you have that moment where you're just like, holy fuck, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. where you're like, you know, you're registering that moment, and it's like he registered that moment like five people before the kid ever got up to him, and he totally was like super composed, like when the kid mm-hmm. came up and was like super nice. And anyway, I thought he was like super cool, but that was like my favorite thing about that. But the I don't know, but the waiting, that last show, that was tragic, because we used to have a really good comic based show in San Jose, mm-hmm. but they pissed all that away. But mm-hmm. coincidentally, I'm supposed to, again, you know, same as you, like, knock on wood, right? But mm-hmm. At the end of the month, so if things go according to plan, next weekend I should be at a show in San Jose that was made by the same guys that made that show that I was just lamenting that kind of mm-hmm. got trashed into like some mm-hmm. Silicon Valley nonsense or whatever.
Yep.
And so it's kind of run by those same guys, and there's supposed to be like a shit ton of artists there. So I did set up something to hopefully get something from Liam Sharp when I go down there. And then there's cool. like a bunch of other people that, you know, hopefully, you know, I don't know, I can get like autographs and see what's going on. But that was, and since it's in San Jose, it's only like, I don't know, like 30 minutes away. So I don't feel as like, you know, mental about it or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I figure, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. Like you said, I'm vaccinated. Like, I'll go down there and see how it goes. And hopefully it's a, you know, it's a fun thing, and I actually get to, like, you know, get out and do some things or whatever. But that's kind of like my game plan. But I mean, yeah. Mostly it's been the same shit, you know, just working and, you know, whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, I haven't gotten stir crazy like a lot of people, because I'm a homebody anyway. As long as I can come home and decompress and do my thing, I'm usually okay. And like Comic Palooza was this year. They skipped last year. They did one this year, but I complained at the last show we were together at how it had gone downhill, and, you know, it seemed to have reached its nadir in the COVID. You know, the fact they even had it during this, they're a bunch of assholes. And I didn't miss that at all. But I had never done a horror show, and it never really even occurred to me necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought about, I definitely want to do the one in Pennsylvania for Dawn of the Dead, but unfortunately, since I found out about that, they've started expanding it to all the other zombie movies. It's like, no, I really kind of want to go to the show when it's just Dawn of the Dead. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably going to wait for their like 45th anniversary, where they focus on the movie I care about the most again. But something about the idea of, wait, it's a convention and it's going to be nothing but horror stuff, it just really got me jazzed, because I'm a horror guy too. I'm not as hardcore as I am with comic books. I'm certainly not anywhere near as knowledgeable as I am with comic books in the horror realm. But that's part of the appeal, is like going into a situation like that where I'm not like some like expert in this stuff. Right. And like, just like not knowing how those type of shows run and what they're going to have their stands, and, you know, probably different kind of people going to the show, similar but not quite the same. But unfortunately, obviously, the circumstances are going to be kind of fucked. And this particular convention, it's in a hotel, and from what I can see, it's mostly in like the hotel ballroom. And to me, that's a really small space under the current circumstances to try to have any kind of convention, especially one that people apparently fly in from across the nation. It's like Comic Palooza has an enormous amount of space, but nobody's fucking flying into there, because it's not a very good show. It's just a big sprawling show, but as far as like who they have, they don't have the kind of people that it's going to attract somebody. They have Wizard World shit that they have at every show. You know, they don't have anybody that's particularly special. So there's no reason to make it a destination because the people who run the show now don't know the hell they're doing. Where this horror show, it's apparently one of the biggest in the country, which I wasn't aware of. I had no idea we did one of the biggest ones in Texas of all places. And they got really cool people. Now, a lot of those people aren't showing up because of the circumstances, but enough of them are showing up that I'm still really excited to do it. I'm just that mix of fear and apprehension, but also just I can't not meet these guys if I have the opportunity, just in case, because you know they're not getting any younger and I'm going to kick myself if I miss them. But I got off the track too. The point was, you know, I've got the Dawn of the Dead podcast, and obviously I want to at least get another episode out before I go to this convention, given that I haven't done one since early this year. But the problem is the podcast is about Mission Creep. The whole thing is going so deep into the politics and, you know, Pennsylvania lore and Pittsburgh lore. And like, you know, like the previous episode, I went deep into like the history of SWAT and policing in the United States of America and just all kinds of shit. But I kind of dig that because that makes sense for that show, where I think there's plenty of people who do like, you know, alien stuff and Predator and that whole universe and stuff. For me, it was always about I bought the omnibus that Marvel put out because they finally put out an omnibus that really feels like an omnibus. I thought the Dark Horse ones were little piddly shits. And so when I bought the Marvel one, I'm like, okay, if I'm going to buy this, then I need to actually fucking read it. And the main way to make sure I'm going to read it is to do some sort of a podcast on it to motivate me to make sure I'm getting through the books to determine how long I'm going to buy these things. And we're going to keep getting omnibus after omnibus. And it's working so far. So that's the main thing was it's everybody covers the movies and there's lots of people who cover the expanded universe and stuff. And my thought with the podcast, besides just motivating me to get through the omnibuses, is that I'm just going to talk about the comic books and a little bit of peripheral stuff as it relates to the comics. But a lot of the deep dive stuff that I was doing in the earlier episodes was really about like a getting into the right headspace and kind of, you know, getting a sense of, you know, talking about like the adaptations of the first two movies ish. It's like, you know, if you don't go into the what made the aliens phenomenon, it just what is there to talk about? You know, I'm just going to talk about it, you know, oh, Walt Simonson did a really good job with this one panel. But ideally going forward, it's really going to be more about each individual story and maybe the creative teams and really focus on the comic book aspect of it. So long as you've got an opinion on the comic book we're reading, and since you specifically wanted the Aliens 89 and Earth War, I assume that there's a personal connection there and a personal angle.
Yeah,
that's all I really need. Because the idea, the goal was always to make it like maybe a half hour, and so far every episode has been closer to an hour. And I think with two people talking about it, and especially if there's some expanded stuff, like, you know, about the comics and stuff, I can see where it would continue to be an hour. But it's not going to be 2 hours. It's not going to be 90 minutes. It's going to be 30, 45 an hour. So there's not a need to really vamp that much. There's not a need to take a bunch of stuff into it. And you've already done more than I would have expected anybody to do, because you were listening to the audiobook and you know, even knew that that was out there. And so you have an opinion on that, even if you know, I don't know if you finished it or not, but even having listened to a few segments.
How many omnibuses are there, and what the first one you bought, what does it cover through?
Oh, shit. Well, let me grab it off the shelf. One sec. Okay, so, and that's another thing too. These are not inexpensive. This was a $125 omnibus.
Yeah, no, I know a lot of these are expensive. I mean, I have to say, like, for me, like, I think I've limited myself. Like, the one thing I'm sort of vapidly collecting is every once in a while I'll pick up one of those DC Absolutes or whatever if I actually like the content of it. So like I was kind of looking forward to, like, you know, they're gonna have the George Perez as Wonder Woman and some more Swamp Thing and stuff like that coming up, and another Jack Kirby Fourth World thing. So like those I'm all kind of looking forward to. So whenever those come out, and I'll probably spend the 100 or 125 or whatever it is. But I haven't really gone in on any omnibus. That sounds ridiculous, right? Isn't an omnibus just an omnibus? But whatever.
I think, because there was actually like an online debate about this, I think that the technical term is omnibus. But I like omnibuy, you know, so I'm
yeah, I was just like, whatever you call it. But yeah.
I always had I questioned the value of omnibuses or omnibuy, whatever. I didn't want to spend the money on it, especially because there were a number of years where they were doing them when Marvel had a particularly shit discount. And of course, there were a lot of years there where Marvel's trades were just way overpriced with shitty discounts. So I just wouldn't buy their stuff. It was just part of my, you know, broad general Marvel boycott. But what happened, as I finally got good quality bookshelves. You know, I've had bookshelves for years, but for the longest time, I had the shitty department store ones that couldn't hold for shit. So, you know, you couldn't put anything of any kind of weight on it, and you could really only put it on the lower shelves. And I finally went out and I bought good quality bookshelves. So I can put these big fat fuckers up on a high shelf and they're okay. They're not going to fall apart on me. They're not going to bow and stuff. But also they just started collecting stuff that I would want to have in that format. Like I got both the deluxe edition Marvel Universe and the Who's Who omnibuses, because that's exactly the format I'd want for a reference book like that. And they're glorious, by the way. Highly recommend them. But also I was getting, because again, I like being cheap, so I'm perfectly happy to get the coloring books. I was getting the essentials until they stopped making them and the Showcase Presents. And then when they switched to the Epic Editions, I was like, fuck you. I want my black and white ones again. I want my cheap ones again. But the fact is, I picked up a few of those Epic collections and they put a lot of bonus stuff in there. Like, you know, deleted pages, altered pages, interviews. There's a lot of bonus material in there, so that makes it much more valuable to me. So after all these years of not getting them, as I've picked some up, I'm actually pretty happy with those. So it's a combination with that. So I'm much more open to it. But also, like, I get my books by mail order, and I get a pretty substantial discount on most of these. Typically, on an omnibus, I'm getting somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% off. So it's a lot easier for me to spend $65 on a valuable, you know, weighty volume than to spend $125 on it. So between having the money and having someplace to put it and wanting to have attractive books on a bookshelf, as opposed to I've got a shelf full of nothing but polybagged Who's Who's and Marvel handbooks. And now that I've got the omnibuses, like, why do I still have these on my shelf? Why don't I consign them to the long box where they belong? Because I don't have enough big fat omnibuses to fill out the space yet. So I'm going to just go ahead and leave the Marvel handbooks up there until I do. So the more of these I buy, the more of the space gets filled out, and the more I feel like I'm getting the full use out of these bookshelves. It would help if Mr. Fix-It would give me back the shelves worth of fucking trades that he's been hoarding for years. You know, it's like, oh, you can hold on to my entire set of Grendel omnibuses, the six volumes, and I'll get them back from you maybe in the next decade, you know? So, yeah. So anyway, so the volume collects Aliens, first series, second series, Earth War, Genocide, Hive, Tribe, Newt's Tale, the Alien 3 adaptation, the Space Marines of mini comics that came with the action figures, Dark Horse Presents stories from issues 24, 42 through 43 and 56, the Dark Horse Presents 5th Anniversary Special, and Dark Horse Insider number 14 through 27. So besides the fact that this is a substantial volume that is a quality presentation on one of the things I hated with the Dark Horse omnibuses is they gave them that stupid smaller manga format for books that were published to be in the American style dimensions. And I resented that shrinking of the artwork and they're just being very dinky in general. Dark Horse could have gotten my money if they'd just done a proper collection. But since they didn't, I had to wait for Marvel. But it also is extremely valuable to me because of all the extra stuff. Like, I want the trading card story from the Alien 3 cards, you know? I want those mini comics from the action figures. And this is Dark Horse never provided.
That was something I have to be honest. Like, the reason why I was listening to what you were saying, you know, and why I asked about it was I was wondering if the omnibus, that first one, broke off from my track record, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, like, I was listening to you, and I'm kind of like, I bought that. And then when you got to, like, the two key things I noticed was clearly I have a grudge against Alien 3, because once you got to Alien 3, I was like, oh, I didn't buy the adaptation of that, and I didn't buy anything that happened after that. But then, you know, when you sprinkle in the Dark Horse comics, you know, 8-pagers or whatever, right? I probably read some of those. And then the other thing I noticed was I never really, I mean, I don't think I ever owned any of the Aliens toys or anything, you know, like, not that I'm not a toy collector or never have been or whatever, like, obviously that's completely false, but I guess that hit at a moment where if I was buying toys, it wasn't the Alien toys, and or it may have hit at a point where I was like, oh, I'm not buying toys because I'm trying to be, like, you know, an adult teenager or something, you know what I mean, like some shit like that, right, where you're like in denial about whatever, right, and you're just kind of like, oh, I don't buy that shit no more, you know, and that kind of thing. So I was like, oh, so when you did that show. Like, I thought that was cool because that was something I never really experienced, right? Like, whether I knew it by osmosis or not, you know, the whole notion of there being, you know, a potential, you know, animated series and the comics that came with the toys and all that. I don't think I was familiar with any of that. So I was like, oh, that's cool that they put all that stuff in the omnibus.
And the second volume does the same shit where they've got, I think they collect stories from the British Aliens magazine that weren't ever printed here in the States.
Oh,
and okay. They might even have one that was never finished in the British magazine, or maybe they're just going to have the incomplete story. But I think they might actually be presenting the conclusion of a story that was never finished 30 years ago. So that's a real fucking draw for me.
Yeah.
But they've solicited the second one. I've ordered it, but it hasn't shipped yet. I don't recall, but I don't think that they've solicited the third one yet. I think that what happens is around the time they're getting ready to ship one is when they're soliciting the next one, and there's gaps. So it's not here yet, but I'm looking forward to checking it out, and I'm real happy with the one I got.
That's one of those things, like, where you get into that whole, you know, they try to recolorize, you know, comic books, and it's like that weird feeling you have. I don't know if you've looked at this or not, but like the Absolute Swamp Thing editions I have, like, they recolor like the whole book, you know, and it's just like it's weird because people make these decisions, you know, like, and it's something hard to talk about, but it's like you look at a page that was on newsprint where they colored things in, you know, blues and greens and maybe Swamp Thing's eyes were fiery red or something like that. But then you go to like the Absolute edition and it's like this kind of like, I mean, obviously the color process is better, but it's like they make these decisions where they're like, all right, now the entire background is red, or, you know, I don't know, like with the Killing Joke, you know, it's like, oh, now Batman doesn't have the yellow oval and there aren't all these garish purple fuchsia, I don't know, spotlights in the county fair that the Joker's made his hideout or whatever. Now it's all gloomy and dark and, you know, like that there's no electricity at that place or something. I don't know. Like, and it's just weird because you're hard pressed because you're like, how can I say one's better than the other? You know, like, but most times I always feel like that's an exercise in futility to quote unquote correct something that's already made an impact on a certain amount of people because you have a certain expectation for it. So I can only imagine, like, I don't have that much nostalgia for book one, but for the people that originally read it in black and white, I can't imagine they would, I mean, unless they're like me where it's like I'm all giddy about having something in color, but like I can't imagine seeing that in action will ever approach the anticipation for it or whatever outcome or result that they were hoping it would have. You know, it's like, I don't know, a lot of those things always seem to be a setup for disappointment.
I know the creators prefer it in black and white as it was originally intended and originally crafted, and I side with them. The coloring they used, again, it was those very light kind of pastel tones, and it just doesn't work, and it takes away from the impact of the special techniques that were being used to illustrate the book the first time around. So I'm not fond of the color. I think it's a commercial choice, but as far as what you're talking about, what I'm reminded of is in the early 2000s, when I still had my shop, they came out with a collection of Jim Steranko's Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. strips.
Oh, okay.
And of course, I'd always wanted those all in one volume. I still don't own those in a volume, you know, to this day. And I bought the trade with the intent of keeping that for my personal collection. But they made this big deal about how they had sent the work to Italy to be completely recolored and in modern colors. And, you know, they were so proud of the work that they had done. And when I looked at it, I immediately was just like, no, this isn't right.
Mm.
And I knew even then that Jim Steranko was very hands-on in all facets of the work that he did. And I'm sure that he was specific to what colors he wanted to use for the books when they were published the first time around, and it seemed clear to me that he was not involved with this recoloring, and it just detracted too much from his artwork and the vitality of the artwork. I think that there's a special arrogance to people going in and thinking that they know better than the people who originally created a work, that they're going to improve upon it by doing you know, with these modern changes. And I'm not saying that you can't improve on a work in that way, but I think especially when you don't consult the original creators or you don't recognize that some things were were done as a choice with a recognition of the limits of what their printing was at the time that it was created. You can make choices and you make the best work you can under those circumstances, and you gear the work for the medium in which it's being printed. So then when you change that and you alter it, you end up with like a George Lucas special edition. You take something that worked the first time and you think you're going to improve upon it. And what you often end up doing is detracting from it because you take away that special something about it or some element of that something. You make it more alien, a thing that is very familiar and very personal to people who respond to a work of art. I think it's a fool's errand. And they always think that it's going to be improvement, and it very rarely is, because if they didn't do it right the first time, we wouldn't be bothering with it 20, 30, 40 years later.
Yeah, it's weird that they don't. I mean, I know there's some, I think like the Killing Joke has this option, but then there's the criticism that like the original colors, the pages don't look as good as the updated colors. Like they're trying to make one look better than the other on purpose or something like that. But like, I think the nicest compromise you could have is something like the Star Trek, the original series stuff, where it's like they have, you know, like if I want, I can view it with the original effects. And if I want to just view, you know, matte paintings and relive the 60s and just kind of, you know, look at those effects the way they were done back then, I can do that. But if I want, you know, I can also keep the, you know, enhanced special effects on and see like where, you know, instead of it being the same dinky bird of prey for like every single episode, you know, they actually like stick in some Romulan warbirds and all that other kind of stuff. And I can kind of go, ooh, cool, or whatever, right? And if you have the choice, maybe like that might be a little less arrogant, right? Like that you can, you know, here's your volume of Starenko, you know, Nick Fury with the colors as they were originally presented. And then here's, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, a couple, you know, hundred more pages of our, you know, fabled Italian recoloring that we feel so good about. But then at least maybe you don't have that, you know, like sour taste in your mouth when you have the option. If you just want to read that first half of the book with the original colors, you can do that. And then, you know, the other half of the book, you know, you don't have to look through if you don't like it.
Well, and it gets me too, because I halfway understand it when it comes to taking something that was on newsprint and giving it upscale printing and the needs to make alterations to account for that. But Killing Joke was already on nice glossy stock. It's drawn.
Yeah,
It had some of the finest coloring of its time, and it still holds up very well today. So it just seems extremely foolish to even bother with that. That's just so unnecessary. And whereas with the Star Trek, I haven't watched a ton of classic Trek since they did the upgrades. But what I have seen, I actually appreciate it, because I think that the aesthetic is still there. It still looks like classic Trek, but obviously doing things they couldn't pull off at a time. Mm-hmm. So it feels like it's more of a full realization of what they would have liked to have been able to do, as opposed to, you know, sticking Jabba the Hutt into the first Star Wars. You know, I think there's improvements, and then there's just distractions.
Yeah.
There is certain aspects where, you know, you have that, I guess what I like to call, you know, black and white, you know, Judge Dredd Ninja Turtle syndrome, where you're like, wait, which one of these guys is it? Like, is it just a random, it's like, I always remember reading, you talking about black and white stuff and, you know, my experience with that. I mean, maybe this is another reason why I'm turned off to black and white, but I remember my buddy, you know, he was getting into Judge Dredd, and I borrowed a bunch of his, you know, I think they were like the Titan reprints or whatever. And I remember I was sitting there reading it, and then, you know, there's a sequence where this random judge gets like blown away. But like at the time I was like looking at it, I'm like, did they just shoot Judge Dredd dead in the head? Like what? And then I was like, oh no, that's just like, you know, Bob or what, you know what I mean? It was like some other fucking judge. But I was just like, at the time when you're like reading it, it's like you can't tell the difference because it's in black and white and there's no distinguishing, you know, they all, you know, once they got the helmet on and they got a gruff chin, I mean, it's like, what, how are you supposed to tell them apart, you know?
It's one thing when Brian Bolin is drawing two judges and different, you know, two different judges who are in the same uniform versus, say, like a Cam Kennedy, you know, right, there's a level of detailing where, okay, I might need a little bit of help here. Could I have a little splash of color, maybe something? Give me something.
I need their armband that says, you know, Judge Billy Bob or whatever it says on the armband. You know?
Can you sling the badge my way so I can see the branding or the number or something?
Right. Just something, but yeah. basically, I'm not Mr. fucking Starship expert or whatever when it comes to Star Trek, but like, you know, and they know that about me too, because it's like, I think the other night they're like, okay, now Derek's gonna fucking zone out because we're about to talk about wrestling and different fucking starships or whatever, you know. It's like, I listen to them and I pay attention to it, but it's just like, you know, so some of that stuff is just not my you know, kind of like what you were saying, like the with the horror thing, it's like some stuff, it's new to you, right? So some of it's fascinating, but it's definitely not your wheelhouse, so you're not about to jump in there and be like, this is my expert opinion about some shit I know nothing about, you know, like, or whatever.
Yeah, and the truth is, I'm happy for the folks to get into those particulars, and obviously when it comes particularly to superhero comics and stuff, I can get into those particulars, but I just, like you said, as long as they've got a phaser and it looks like a phaser, I'm cool. As long as the Enterprise is okay, whatever other ships you want to throw against it, I'm not going to fight you on it too much. I do think of Romulan Bird of Prey should look like one, but, or Klingon Bird of Prey. See, there you go, right there. I just outed myself right there. So.
No, but see, that's one of those things, like, I'm fine with that, but, you know, when they get talking, it's not Klingon Bird of Prey and Romulan Bird of Prey. No, it's like, did you see the Klingon NX whatever, and all this other stuff? And I'm just kind of sitting there going, dude, is it blue? Does it look like a whatever? Like, I'm fine with it, you know? Like, but it's like, sometimes there's some of that stuff where it's like the minutia for me, it's like, that's probably, you know, like you said, with comic book stuff, I get into the minutia and love it all, but like some stuff, it's like I tend to, you know, my face goes blank and I tend to zone out about whatever it is, or I only know, you know, I only know the bare minimum, you know, modicum to keep up with it, you know.
Well, I mean, it's like the Star Wars, you know, I was the perfect age, you know, saw all the movies theatrically, had all, you know, some of the first assortments of the action figures, so of course you have that familiarity that you get from, you know, seeing the characters in plastic with their name on the package, that kind of stuff. But it wasn't until I played the collectible card game in the late 90s that a lot of that stuff meant anything to me. I couldn't have told you who Jack Porkins was. I didn't know who Wedge Antilles was. Even having grown up around all that Star Wars stuff, and even having that quality of minutia from like a Hammerhead action figure, I had no idea of how deep just the first trilogy went, because a lot of those characters, if they weren't Han, Luke, and Leia, I just didn't give a shit. And when you're playing the card game, you're building decks and stuff, that is given relevance to you as a more casual fan, in my case. And then for a little while there, while I was playing the game, I got really into Star Wars again, and then I got out of playing the game when the guy I was playing with and I, like, I wasn't at the job I was at anymore, and we didn't hang out after I wasn't at that job anymore, and now those boxes are up in the attic and have been for a long time now. As long as we've had that attic, they've been up there. And I've forgotten most of that information. So it's like, when it was relevant to me, I got, you know, educated, but I'm not enough of a fan to retain all that stuff. And I'm never going to be the guy who knows where the you know, the drive is and where the phasers are and where the torpedo, photon torpedoes are at, that kind of bullshit. Just the fact that I'm going back and forth between Star Wars and Star Trek should tell you. It's like, I just don't care. I'm not an engineer. That was never my idea. For me, it's got to be about the characters and the plots and some of the finer details I don't really give a shit about. As we discussed, a part of it is also seeing it years and years removed from their time period. Like you said, if I'd been there when the giant green rabbit was introduced into Star Wars, then I might have been more like, oh, getting more excited when he shows up. But right. From a remove, it's like, what the fuck is a giant green rabbit doing in Star Wars? You know, I'm happy for you guys that are excited for it, but I'm with Lucas, like, what the fuck is this even doing here?
I remember the what you make me think of is the reason why I would know all the names and things, especially for Star Wars shit, is because of the toys, right? Like, I would buy, like, the toys or want to buy the toys, and you'd get, you know, that's how you would know all the names of all the stuff. And then, or even the spaceships or whatever, right? Because it was a toy, or it was a micro machine, or a, you know, I don't know, a plush doll or whatever the hell it was. And, like, the way you know where I completely, like, just, like, went completely off and went, fuck this franchise, like, I don't care about it anymore, is like basically, you can quiz me on the original trilogy and I'll probably do pretty good, right? Like, I'll probably know fucking people's names and stuff and be like, yes, Walrus Man is Ponda Baba, like, I know all this goofy ass shit, right? But then I think the minute you get into, like, prequel stuff and especially, like, I think, you know, prequel stuff and any of the sequels, you know, like, it's like, I'm kind of where you're at that with the whole, like, okay, yeah, I know some of the main characters' names, you know, I know the Han, Luke, Leia characters, but, like, after that, it's like, if somebody were to tell me, oh, you don't know, you know, Bliggity Bleeze, who's from the, you know, I don't know, Separatist Federation of whatever's, like, I'd be like, no. I'm like, I never owned the toy, I don't know what it is, like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like, that's kind of that key moment where it's like, that's where I kind of go out to lunch with some of those things. So I mean, I kind of get it, right? Like, because if you're that far distanced and removed from it, and like you said, it has no emotional truth or weight, right? Like, then it makes complete sense to me, you know?
Well, and I remember Rob, I think, I don't know if it was Film and Water or just maybe, you know, one of the other shows, but he was talking about specifically Indiana Jones and how can he call himself an Indiana Jones fan if he only likes a couple of the movies.
Right.
In his case, he was talking about Raiders and Last Crusade, and I'm in the same boat, except for me, it's Raiders and Temple of Doom. I don't care for anything that came after that. And I think what it comes down to is, are you grown? If you're grown, you don't have anything to prove to anybody. So, like, you know, I listen to folks who are not comic book fans, and they watch the MCU movies, and they just watch the ones they want to watch, and they're not going to get suckered into watching all this extra shit that they don't care about. You know, like, why am I going to watch a mediocre TV series that's going to lead into a mediocre movie? You know, why would I waste 8 hours of my life, 10 hours of my life? If it's something I want to see, I'll see it, and I'm not going to worry about missing anything, because you don't have that false scarcity, that need for inclusion and all that kind of shit. Now, because we do the podcast, I still end up watching most of the Marvel stuff, even though at one point I thought I was going to be able to jump off of it a little bit, but that hasn't happened yet, in part, again, because I know the guys are still following it, and I know there's podcasts that, you know, to be produced that people, you know, have some interest in hearing what we have to say about this stuff. But the great thing about, like, something like an Indiana Jones is I can just say I only watched the first two. They'll try to sell me the box set of the four movies. And I know there are plenty of people that will rebel against the four movies, but there are a number of them that are like, well, I just want my trilogy. I don't give a shit about the trilogy. So I bought the first two on DVD from like a Blockbuster back when those existed, you know, or a Hollywood or some shit like that, because I just wanted those first two. With Star Wars, you know, I just don't really enjoy Star Wars in general anymore. I so much shit has happened, and I've subjected myself to so much stuff that I didn't enjoy that it makes it hard for me to even go back and watch the original trilogy. But I know I care about that. I know at some point, if that fatigue ever goes away, I'm not far enough removed from that bullshit, because I got burned by the prequel trilogy, and I got 2/3 of the way through the new one, and so that's only a few years ago. It's going to be a while before I want to give enough of a shit to go back and watch the original movies. And I'm sure there's still stuff there to love, but that extra stuff taints it for me. And so why would I keep subjecting myself to shit that I haven't enjoyed in terms of expanded universe in literally decades? Why would I keep, you know, chipping away at that early nostalgia, that early fandom, for this new shit that just doesn't mean anything to me? So I think it's okay to like the two movies you like, or whatever, you know, whichever ones you want to pick. It's like the whole Star Trek thing where you're supposed to like every other one. Well, fuck that shit. I personally like Search for Spock better than I like Wrath of Khan. And I know that makes me an outlier, but fuck it. You know, I enjoy that movie more. I think that Wrath of Khan is extremely overrated. And I think a lot of it has to do with people being disappointed with the first movie, which I saw too, and I fell asleep during. I saw the first four movies theatrically. So it's not like I have a different experience from those people. It's just that I liked Wrath of Khan okay, but I didn't revere it. And it didn't have the impact for me that of Spock dying that it had for a lot of other people. I just really enjoyed the third one more. I think it moves faster. I really like Christopher Lloyd's Klingon, and that was the one that I had the action figures for that were cool. And you were
the dude who had the action figures for exactly. Those. I was always like, when did those come out? Because like I swear I never saw those, but I know which ones you're talking about, because I was like, oh, those were like the little G.I. Joe like looking Star Trek figures and stuff, and I was always like, where did those come from? Like, it was like, I always remember I never saw those. But yeah.
Well, and what was cool too is they had G.I. Joe articulation, so they could swivel at the waist,
bent
to the knees. And in particular, the Christopher Lloyd Klingon character, his boots had little spikes on it. So he was always the guy who was doing like that, the one from the second James Bond movie, the lady with the knives in her shoes.
Oh, okay.
Like Klimt or something. So he was always the guy who's running around kicking people with his knife boots. And so he was a very handy action figure to fight my G.I. Joes with. So also, it helps that my Star Trek The Motion Picture Spock got stolen by a kid at the apartment complex I was at. And when I tried to get it back from him, his two sisters held me up against the post and punched me in the face repeatedly, so that I had to go home and put it like literally right like out of a cartoon. My parents actually put like a hunk of meat on my face to help with the swelling from these two girls kicking my ass over this fucking Spock figure that doesn't even have good articulation. So I think it matters too that I managed to actually hold on to the Klingon. Nobody stole it from me and nobody kicked my ass over it. So that was probably a big plus too in terms of like that experience that you have positive memories associated with, you know, regardless yeah. of the quality of the actual work.
The stuff I can think of mostly like where I actually like keyed in on them and kind of enjoyed them were like a lot of the Marvel magazines, I think, when, but that was, I don't know, that was kind of far and few in between. Like I was definitely like, even though like I know you said like, you know, and I appreciate what you're saying, like, right, it was the first time they tried to do a color book and the process was not all there, but it's weird like some of that stuff too, like it's weird how like a fucked up color process you could still have like member berries over, because it's like innovation. Like innovation comics suck, right? Like I mean, I don't mean to be like an asshole about it, but like innovation, like the process of it and the way the final product looked. Like I get technically that you could throw shade even on like this Aliens book too, right? Like to me, in some sense, they're kind of equivalent because I feel like I have the same member berries over them, right? But it's like it's that weird thing of when like you really like have nostalgia for something or love something, like it's almost like you sit there and like it's like one of those things where I think we were talking about a Transformers episode not too long ago, and I was like sitting there going, oh, look at that stupid animation flaw, you know, and it's like it's stupid, it's an animation flaw, but I fucking love it. And it's like I almost feel like, you know, part of me feels like, you know, some of it is like, oh, look at that stupid coloring process, look at how awful it is, it's great, you know, like that whole like prune juice, give me more please, or whatever. I don't know, I don't know if that makes any sense, but like that's something I think is decidedly, you know, nostalgia driven, you know, and not technical driven. Like I think I get what you're saying, and also I comprehend it, like, but then there's also that part of it where I'm just kind of like, you know what, like I think I like this, you know, flaws and all type thing, but yeah, I don't think I ever read the any of Denise's black and white stuff before this.
I just want to throw in too is I agree with you that innovation was objectively not that great, but it was my first exposure to Bart Sears and Ron Lim. Mm. And so I have affection for those books because that was a flashy style of artwork before the Image guys. That was the first time in a mainstream superhero type book where I saw the nipples on the girls. And I was like, so like, woo, you know, it just seemed extra cool. And I like that art style. Also, Justice Machine, I'd had an interest in, and I believe it started at Kamiko and then it moved over to Innovation. So, they did the adaptation of Piers Anthony's Incarnations of Immortality. I think Mike Okamoto did painted artwork on that. And again, I probably couldn't as an adult read on a pale horse and appreciate it. But seeing the adaptation while I was reading the novel, you know, at the correct age to read a novel like that, I have an affection for Innovation because of when I was exposed to it. And if I try to look at it now, it probably wouldn't hold up. But a lot of times it's important when that work gets to you, how much of fondness and how forgiving you are of it.
Well, yeah, because for me, I mean, I the reason why I brought up Innovation is because the member berries I'm having over book two of Aliens like feel exactly the same, because my mom loved all the Anne Rice stuff, so she would always buy, like, you know, Interview with a Vampire, Queen of the Damned, The Vampire Lestat. So like I had like we had all those Innovation comics, right? And that was extremely similar to this, where it was like painted artwork, but the printing process wasn't quite registering the actual painted artwork. But I still have, like, when I think of that, like, I mean, because my mom's associated with it too, like, total, like, nostalgia, good feels, like, whatever, you know, regardless of how well
technically executed the coloring process was. So I guess the reason why I bring that up is I almost feel, you know, probably not as much because I don't have the mom association with Aliens Book 2 that I do with the you know, Vampire Lestat stuff, but it the process is similar, and so I can, you know, I guess that's because I can separate the technical from, or maybe I can't separate technical from the nostalgia, right? Like the nostalgia trumps any technical, you know, shortcomings, I guess.
I remember back when Blade came out in 1999, and I got to burr up my ass just to, you know, I guess, I don't know, educate myself or whatever. You know, I went and got a bunch of Blade back issues and everything. And you remember that Blade series he did for Marvel? Like, that's just, the art looks nice, but the storytelling, you're like, man, he could have used, like, Giffen to, like, you know, direct that somehow, or, you know what I mean? Like, completely 100% concur with that assessment, because it seems like a lot of times when you look at all the storytelling from something like Justice League Europe, it's like, you know, 100% that's Giffen doing the storytelling. And then when Bart Sears kind of has free rein to be experimental, it's like, man, it's really, really experimental, where you're just like crazy panel breaks and you're like, how am I supposed to read this and follow this? It's like, it's you know, in some cases, some of the pages are almost incomprehensible, you know, like to me at least. And I kind of feel like the same way about like a character like Wonder Woman. Like, I'm sure there are people out there, right, that are like, oh, Wonder Woman's hot, right? Or whatever, right? Like, or something like that. But like, I don't know how to explain it, but I just always thought of like, kind of like how you said that Newt takes on characteristics of Ripley. And like, I feel like that transference, like, is similar to how I've always felt about Wonder Woman, where it's like, I've never looked at Wonder Woman as, you know, something like, I don't know, so just something that's a character that I've ever wanted to objectify. I know that's like a weird thing to say. It's probably self-accusatory, right? But like, I just never looked at her that way.
I understand where you're coming from when you're talking about Wonder Woman specifically. One of my favorite Wonder Woman artists is Mike Deodato Jr. And of course, one of the things that people hated about his work on that book was the sexualizing of Wonder Woman, where she's got the giant breasts and tons of butt shots and the whole twist so that you make sure to get the boobs and the butt and the same shot, everything. But as a person who's reading those comics when they were coming out, all I could think about was that Wonder Woman finally had a cool, flashy image style artist that could attract attention, and it was really exciting with the panel layouts being all like big and imagey and action packed stuff. And so I never saw the sex, so I completely understand where you're coming from when you're talking about Newt. But of course, me coming at it at a much later age, it's so clear that they are intentionally sexualizing her. She's just drawn in, you know, splay legged and everything, you know, dressed Ripley at the end of the first movie, which is definitely something that I recognize as being a sexual moment from the first film. John Byrne. That was such a weird time, because I definitely got the sense of him just being bored with it all and just like doing a bunch of random shit. I think there was a lot of frustration too, because I think he really thought the next Men was going to be his Fantastic Four and his opportunity to like unleash something that was going to be the series that would sustain him going forward and be his, you know, his cash cow and his main creative endeavor. And then when that didn't happen, I don't think he ever quite recovered from that, and he just started doing a bunch of random shit. And then I think he lost so much ground in the industry that he like tried to go back and do the Marvel thing, and by that point he just wasn't commercially viable anymore. So that was a really weird time, and a little bit of I felt like a little bit of self-sabotage to some degree, or maybe just a recognition that he didn't have the audience he once had, and sort of like floundering, it seemed like.
Well, some of it I thought was like the Wonder Woman run was like spiteful, I think, is the only way I can describe it. It was like, oh, you like this shitty image stuff? Well, I can do shitty image stuff too. You know, like that's what his Wonder Woman run felt like to me.
Well, especially the early issues when he was giving it sort of that McFarlane-ish inking style.
Yeah.
I've still got a counter dump in a long box that has that style, and you can just tell that he's trying to do the image thing. And I, again, I, it, it's... It makes me sad because given how critical he was of Image, it's sort of like when Ben goes into the cellar at the end of Night of the Living Dead, where this whole time he's been fighting this thing, and then he finally succumbs to that, and it still doesn't work out for him, and it's just like a double defeat, it seems like. Like, he not only does he lose, but he went back on his convictions and still loses, you know?
You know what's funny, though? I never saw it as him going back on anything. I always felt like it was the whole, you know, I bite my thumb at you, sir, thing, like, where it was like, he's going, oh, these guys became multimillionaires doing this. Well, I'm not even trying, and I can do what they do, and you should, you know, somehow love me for it. But it's like, but the only thing that didn't work out was, like, that last part, right? Like, because it's like, oh, to me, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's a super Image thing to do to only draw, like, two stars on Wonder Woman's, like, underwear, right? Like, but, like, did that make him any fans? Like, no. Like, you know, like, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about what you're saying, though. Like, for me, like, I followed a lot of stuff. But, like, I mean, he definitely lost his way after the response to Next Men. I think the only thing that I really, like, I mean, I'll go to bat for, but I know you think they're all boring lamos or whatever. But, like, I love the OG X-Men. So when he did that, you know, Hidden Years thing like that, I was all over and followed that, like, faithfully, where I bought, like, all the issues as they were coming out or whatever.
I mean, I did love the concept of it, that they're going to go in there and fill out the issues that were reprint only. That's such a nerdy thing to do, but I'm so down for it. It reminds me of when Michelle Fife finished off a Bloodstrike of all things.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
It's not a book I would ever read, and in part because I never gave a shit about the original X-Men, but I love that it exists, and I'm sorry he didn't get to finish it all the way up to giant size like he wanted to do. But as far as Spider-Man Year One, yeah, fuck that
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, fuck that shit. We are in sync.
Well, and what kills me too is when he was doing Marvel Team Up, when he was, like, in his prime, he was so good at drawing Spider-Man and all the characters he was interacting with. So it was just you were keenly aware of how much he couldn't tap into that youthful enthusiasm when he went back to it, and everything looked all sketchy and rough and just didn't have the pizzazz that it used to have. It was really disheartening.
Yeah. I feel like that was like a double body blow, because I think for me, I had spent all this time, you know, sticking with the Clone Saga, you know, and then it was like, you know, the Chapter One stuff, and you were like, you thought you were going to get out of it, but then it just felt like, you know, another body blow, and you're just like, this sucks too, you know?
Well, and again, when John Byrne can't sell X-Men and Spider-Man comics, that's sad. And that's how you know that he's on the path to doing fucking Star Trek Fumetti's before disappearing entirely into the hell of commissions only. I mean, how bored and tired do you have to be to go and just, like, Photoshop cut up, you know, stills from old TV shows and paste it together like fucking color forms, man? That's depressing.
Yeah, I still kind of don't understand that. And it's funny because I own that, because I went and did that Shatner Byrne package or whatever, because I wanted Byrne to sign some stuff, and I didn't realize he was just going to sign stuff anyway, like, at that convention. I think if I had realized that, I would have just waited in line and had him sign the stuff I wanted him to sign. But I signed up for that package, and part of that was getting, like, one of those Fumetti books or whatever. So I ended up getting that, which is weird, because I tried to read some of it, and it's like, I mean, it's not bad, but it's like, it is kind of strange, you know? Like, and I prefer you probably haven't read this, or maybe you know of it or whatever, but the Leonard McCoy Frontier Doctor that he did, like, that's all, you know, pencils, inks, written by him or whatever, and, like, that's actually pretty good. Like, so, but
I didn't read it, but I'm vaguely aware of it because I'm a McCoy fan, so I think I at least paused over that, but I just couldn't make the leap. And also, I still have a strong aversion to $4 comic books, and I'm pretty sure that was in the $4
realm. That was probably in that era.
So that came out at a time where I just absolutely refused to do it, and I've still mostly have stuck with that. I was when DC did their hold the line at $2.99, I was right there with them. And once they broke that promise, I stopped buying DC books too. That was just my number. And, you know, that's old man shaking his fist at the clouds. But something about paying $4 for a comic book, and it's not like I've rented a Redbox in years, but I'm pretty sure Redbox was still like $2.50. They, at the very least, they were $2 when they were trying to charge $4 for a comic book. It's like, okay, I can get a blockbuster motion picture that's going to run at minimum of 90 minutes, or I can buy a comic book that I'll read in 10 to 20 minutes. It's like, I just refused. I just, you know, even with good discounts. Although at that time, IDW, I'd have probably been getting a shit discount to boot. So it's expensive and shitty discount. So I just, it had too many strikes against it. Or I'm a cheap bastard, however you want to phrase it.
No. I mean, there's something to be said for that. I was thinking about this, like, are the stores like that we went to, like, are, you know, when I last came up there, like, mm-hmm. are those still going?
Oh yeah. Yeah. See, I was very doom and gloom, especially when, you know, at the height of the pandemic, when everything was shutting down, that a lot of comic book shops were going to close. And I don't know if it's the Houston market or, I mean, cause I haven't heard about a ton of comic shops closing, even with all the bullshit going on. It was a surprisingly smooth transition, seemingly to, from Diamond to, essentially Discount Comic Book Service, Lunar, whatever they call themselves, when DC changed their distribution. So it doesn't seem to have been as much of a fuckery as what Heroes World was. Things just kind of kept on keeping on. There was a shop in particular, I wish to God I'd known about it when you were here, called Dimensions. And it's an insane shop, because it's the exact opposite of Bedrock City, where Bedrock really thrives on the toys and the new sparkly thing. This is a place that's about nothing but dusty oddities. And what's cool about Dimensions is it's themed. So it's not like you're looking at a bunch of boxes and you're saying A's, B's, C's. It's like, here's the horror section. Here's the rock and roll memorabilia section. Here's the Western section. And it's a serpentine shop. It's basically set up like a maze. So not only are you finding, you know, one, it literally, it's like, here's the dimension for all the Doctor Who shit. And then you go over here and here's the police procedural stuff. And you can't just like go from one place to another place. You're going to have to go through the maze to get to everything. And I didn't know about it when you were here before, but it's like, I want somebody to visit me just so I can take them through Dimensions to experience this bizarre, cool ass fucking place. And I thought for sure that shit was going to close down under the circumstances, but they're still going. It's like a hobby of this plumber guy that just bought way too much shit over the course of his career. And I guess the plumbing is held up for him. So even if there's dry spells for the comics, he does well. Plus, there isn't a lot out that way. It's in Seabrook. So he's pretty much the only game in that part of town. So they've managed. Even and there's like fucked up construction too, because they've been trying to expand like a super highway out that way. And so I thought between COVID and the construction, they would definitely be fucked. They're keeping on. And Bedrock was never in danger, because the guy who runs that place, he always had a lot. He came from money. So he was able to put a ton of money into those places and had money to sustain himself. And that's very much like the big chain in town. So I wasn't worried about Bedrock, but to my knowledge, nobody of note closed down. And in fact, there's been a few places that have expanded over the circumstances. Like there's a toy place called Misfit Toys that has added locations and added locations like in the Heights. There's still, you know, Houston's keeps on keeping on, it seems like. I don't know how it goes for other towns, but, you know, we haven't had any problems here in terms of sustaining these fan locations.
Mm. Oh, that's good. I was sad because there was a place I got. I don't know if you listen to Professor Allen's show every once in a while, but like there were some places where, you know, I got him some dollar trades, you know. So mm-hmm. he's like, that's, you know, I mean, especially if it's more than four issues, that certainly meets the quarter bin qualification mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned, right? And so so I found a bunch of cool stuff for him and sent him some of that stuff. But I was, you know, it was like, I don't know. Kind of like what you were saying when we had these months where it's like, oh yeah, maybe, you know, we can start doing shit again. And, you know, I got my vaccine and like, let me go out and do some things and shit. And, you know, in addition to certain franchise chain stores that I wanted to go to that had all closed down out here. Well, not all, but like, it's like, you know, the anything that's remotely close to me. Like if I wanted to go to stupid Rubio's to get a fish taco, it's like I usually went to this place that's pretty close to here in Auto Mall, and that location was permanently closed. And when I looked into it, I was like, well, why is that? And basically, like, I think a lot of the, like, I think, I forget what I read, but it was something like 50% of their franchises, like, all got shut down or whatever. Mm. So that accounts for that. And then the other thing that I was going to do was, I was like, oh yeah, I want to go back to that store where I got Professor Allen some of those trades and things like that, and just check that out and everything. And when I did, I realized that store is permanently closed, you know. So it's like there's a bunch of shit out here that, like, I mean, you know, there's still stuff that, you know, is, like you say, is keeping on or whatever, but there were some places where I was like, oh, let me see if I can still go to these places and do these things. And I'm like, oh, you know, they're pretty much a done deal, right? Like, so.
Well, the game plan should have been shut everything down short term, you know, give us a chance to properly quarantine and minimize the spread of the virus until we can get a vaccine. Everybody gets the fucking vaccine, and then we're done with this. And if you look at other countries, that's the kind of stuff they did. And the most successful countries did that and have done great. And they completely reopened and they're fine, right? But we're fucking America, and we couldn't do what we were supposed to do. And what I was seeing, especially when things were being shut down, is there was no government support in Texas. And so people that were already on the margins, I could see them selling shit out of their fucking cars. And they were already starting to put up like tent cities and parking lots and stuff. It was, and there was also a spike in crimes, particularly violent crimes in our area. You know, I mean, I would literally see cop cars, you know, busting people, and you know, there were murders and shit. You know, one of my coworkers' son got shot. You know, it just shit was getting fucked up. And so I got on Twitter and I was talking about how, look, I know what we were supposed to do. We didn't do that. We're fucked now. And closing everything down is just making things worse. So as much as I hate to say it, we need to go ahead and reopen. And I think I pissed a lot of people off when I did that. I definitely noticed there was like a bit more of a quiet or a pow around my Twitter and responses to me and stuff. And I'm pretty sure I pissed off a lot of folks that are more lefty like me. But the fact remains that ultimately, despite all of our attempts to not fuck everything up, things got fucked up. Texas opening up its economy earlier than everybody else seems to have potentially saved some businesses. It's not how things should have worked out. I definitely wish things had gone differently. It would have definitely been better for people if things had gone differently. But because of the circumstances, ultimately, I think it was the right move, because we don't have those kind of closures. The only things that come to mind is like Yaya Mary's, which is a really great Mediterranean restaurant off of San Felipe. They closed, but they're part of the Landry Corporation, who've managed to float this fairly well. They had their down periods, and they had their deferrals, and people were working for reduced wages and shit for a while there. But they came back, or they've come back reasonably well, and I've been hearing that they're supposed to reopen Yaya Mary's, as a for instance. There's a few chains that, you know, smaller chains that closed that really, I think we're going to survive anyway. Like, there's M Burger that I think they lost some locations. And there was some stuff that was moving into Texas that seemed like it slowed down or stopped. But generally speaking, most everything has kept running. I'm sure that people have died over that, and that fucking sucks. And obviously, that's not what should have happened. But because of what did happen, it seems like it was the... financially, it was the right course for the businesses. It was the right course because we didn't do things correctly. That was the best thing we could do because of the circumstances that were created by people who didn't know what they were supposed to do correctly. So, you know, I don't like feeding into, you know, right-wing narratives, but perhaps California got fucked because of some of the things they did that were right but didn't work out. Just like, you know, there was a lot of talk about the psychological toll of all the isolation. And I know people who took their lives under the circumstance as a result. And so when I hear somebody like Trump talking about that, I know that he doesn't give a fuck about that. And he's just using it as a talking point to build himself up. That doesn't mean he's wrong, though. You know, shit did happen where people died, not because of the COVID, but because of the impact of attempts to you know, stymie the spread. And since so many of those efforts didn't work out, it ends up being kind of futile because you have the sacrifice that we all were making to try to do things the right way, and too many people didn't do things the right way, and it didn't work out. So you only can give so many points for a noble effort if shit gets fucked up anyway, you know? So I don't like it. I don't like handing a win to philosophical enemies, but I also have to have the objectivity to see, well, this was fucked, but at least it worked out in this way. You know, there is a half full glass ultimately in some respect.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for my milkshake, my $5 milkshake.
$5 milkshake. Damn, that's a good milkshake. I don't know if it's $5, but it's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, they're pretty much all $5 milkshakes now.
Yeah, I mean, shit, $5, you'd fucking be lucky. Oh! Have you heard from anybody else, like, in our little circle recently or anything, or?
Well, okay, so here's the funny thing, is Shag had contacted me about the little guest appearance on the Bwahaha podcast, because he wanted me to cover one of the Power of the Atom tie-ins for JLI.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he likes I could have just, like, recorded something and sent it his way, but he wanted to get together for it, so I was like, cool. And so I'm talking with him, and we're, again, coming from two different, completely different places. One of the reasons the Marvel Handbook still exists, those recordings are there, and I have full intention to exploit them. But what happened is, between the not enjoying the process of putting together a podcast as much as I thought I would, and not liking the prospect of continuing to try to gather recordings while working under COVID conditions, and knowing that other people were either doing the same, or they're out of work, or there's a bunch of shit going on in people's lives, and I don't want to be a thing that, you know, gets in their way. But also, there's a sense of, like, I was physically distancing myself from people and trying to protect myself and my household from infection and shit. And so psychologically, I kind of created a bubble around myself where I didn't want to talk to people. I just didn't want to deal with any of that shit. So I just put all that shit on hold and come back to it later on. And I was telling Shag that, and Shag was in the exact opposite direction. Because he was so isolated by the virus, he was trying to put together as many shows as he could to talk to as many people as possible, to connect to people and feel connected to people in the absence of being around them. And of course, he's the number one guy about finding a way to make an excuse to fly someplace or drive someplace and meet up with his, you know, nuclear subs, right, and all that kind, right, of shit.
Right.
So him being the social butterfly that he is, he's out there more than ever, and I'm as even more removed than ever. So very rarely have I talked to anybody, and if I can just mail something in, I tend to mail it in. In part because I kept thinking about, well, what happens if I record with somebody and then I'm sitting on this material for a year and they die of COVID, and then their last, you know, ghostly message from beyond is talking about Captain Marvel on the fucking handbook. It's like, I didn't want that on my conscience. I didn't want that to be, no, I don't think anybody wants their swan song to be on one of my fucking shows. You know, and also, as the social media climate has become more prosecutorial, and knowing that I have a bunch of podcasts where we curse and we'll have hot takes, I'm much more conscious of people whose names are out there being fucked over by association with me. So it's like something like Marvel Handbook. One of the good things about that is, by design, that's an all ages podcast. So if there's any cursing, I bleep that out. If there's anything too controversial, I'll edit that out. I'm protecting anybody who's associated with that podcast. When it comes back, that'll continue to be the case. And so I don't think anybody's going to get harmed by appearing on the Marvel Handbook. But obviously, a lot of our other shows, you know, there's five. There's potential, you know, I instances of somebody getting burned because of something I do. And I don't want that to be the case. I don't want to have any collateral damage. As it is, you know, that's why I don't put my name out there, is because I don't want to be held accountable for my own bullshit, much less making somebody else accountable for my bullshit. So, like, on your show, you guys are maybe not as raw as us, but you know, you curse and, you know, you'll go to places. So I feel like you're enough on my wavelength to where I'm not going to drag you into some shit that you can't handle.
Well, and it's not any shit that I haven't already dragged, right, myself.
Whereas if I had the on a Marvel handbook, and they're being nice and polite and their normal selves. And somewhere else in that podcast, we say some fucked up shit that we're not supposed to be saying, and their name is associated with that, and somebody loses their job or some shit. That troubles me. So I'm just much more conscious for years I held off on having any of the shows because, you know, like I there were certain things I wanted to be able to do. Like I was going to make sure to get him in the Secret Wars episode. And then by the time it came time to do the Secret Wars episode, I was already afraid that a guy who we know what his job is, you know, and he's very out there and his name's very out there. And I don't want to be responsible for fucking his shit up either. But also when I did reach out to him, he was like, what's Secret Wars? What are you talking about? You know, he'd forgotten that he ever committed to doing it in the first place. I'm like, you know what? I'm not getting a huge amount of enthusiasm from, you know, like, or even acknowledgement that we never talked about this in the past. So I'm just going to let that be because I'm just afraid of doing harm. And so I want to make sure that anybody who's involved with any of the stuff where we curse and are bro-y and shit are on that wavelength and they've got their own skeletons. And so we're not going to do any harm to each other. But if there's somebody that I think could be exposed, I just don't want to be responsible for that. I don't want to have that on my conscience. I don't want to do that to somebody. So I'm just much more reticent to bring people onto the shows unless it's a safe show. And the safest show we do is Marvel Handbook, and I'm not doing that right now. And I don't foresee doing it until next year because Marvel's got a new fucking product every 5 fucking minutes to the point where I'm getting sick of their fucking asses. But at the moment, there is a momentum for us to continue to cover that shit. So, you know, I'm getting all the Marvel coverage I can stomach just keeping up with what's going on right now, especially this glut where they've pushed everything back and now they're trying to release everything all at the same time. Just trying to keep up with that shit's all the Marvel I can handle right now.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, I was kind of surprised because I did get the sense that you were done with things after Endgame. So when some of those things started rolling out, my take on it was, oh, well, you know, it's been, you know, the COVID thing and the lockdown. And I imagined you guys just wanted to get together and enjoy each other's company. And if this was a way to do that, you use that as the opportunity, right? Like, but
yeah,
that's,
yeah,
that's
definitely like, for instance, with Black Widow, I had real reservations about seeing that movie. I did not intend to see it theatrically. I just did not feel it was safe at that time yet. Then Disney said, hey, we'll give it to you for $30. So it's like, fuck, I can watch it from the safety of my home, and the guys want to talk about it, so let's do that shit. Now Shang-Chi's coming up and they're insisting on releasing that theatrically. I guarantee fucking you we won't be doing a podcast that on the first week of release, because there's no way I'm going into a movie theater on a weekend, period. It's just not going to happen. I made a special exception for the Suicide Squad because I was excited to see that, and because I managed to maneuver it so that I was in essentially a private screening or very near to it. There was a small enough number of people spaced far enough apart that I could handle it. But I know with something like Shang-Chi, it's not going to be like that because the Marvel people, they're just going to be more people. So that's not a movie I'm super enthused about anyway, and they're not offering it for streaming, so at best it's going to be a second week of release thing. But if the guys don't go out and see it, or if there's just a lack of enthusiasm, you know, I don't want to be the one with the Asian representation to be the one that we don't cover. But if we don't cover it, we don't cover it. You know, it's the circumstances are different with this one, and if Marvel's insisting on making people do unsafe shit so they can make more money, I kind of feel like fuck them then, you know, eat that shit.
Well, that's the thing, though. There's nothing, I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, you guys have covered pretty much everything, you know, in a fairly timely manner that has come out. But, like, this is one of those things where it's like, you know, I don't know. I haven't been in a movie theater, period, right? Like, since this whole thing started. Mm-hmm. I'm moderately contemplating certain things like that, where I'm like, oh, maybe I will go see, you know, Shang-Chi or whatever, right? Like, maybe I will. But then, you know, I read things where it's basically like, it's going to have a 45-day theatrical window. Mm-hmm. Like, then they're going to put it on Disney Plus, and then I'm going to fucking steal it and watch it, and then I don't have to worry about it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like, that's kind of where my headspace is right now. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I'll be bored or something, or change my mind or have whatever, and I'll be like, you know what, maybe fuck it. Maybe I'll go to the theater and see it. But, like, the only thing I was, like, kind of gung-ho to see, and I think that's still still going to be on HBO Max, so I guess at this point I don't care. But I think at some point I thought Dune was only going to be released in the theaters, and I kind of have a jonesing to see how that goes for really reals. But if it's going to be on HBO Max, I'll just watch it there.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. I know the filmmakers were very upset about that announcement, and more than anybody but perhaps the Godzilla vs. Kong people fought against that happening, but I'm pretty sure that they got a substantial check. I still think that they're afraid. I think it's been stated that they were afraid that streaming is going to hurt them as a franchise because they see Dune as a multi-picture deal. And rightly, they should, since there's plenty of material to adapt. And the fact that the first movie is not going to adapt the entire first book. They're going to break it up. So they've got a whole series of movies they're planning on doing. And so they're going to want to be able to maximize the impact and the revenue off of that. And they seem like they're content to just push it into 2022. And I'm not sure there isn't still wrangling over that because they have very legitimate fears because we've seen what's happened with Black Widow and with the Suicide Squad, where the streaming option hurts the theatrical return. And, I don't know if there, I mean, obviously Black Widow isn't a likely franchise anyway, but certainly the Suicide Squad has been very much hurt, and any chances of them making sequels anytime soon has been hurt by that box office, which is, depressed by streaming and by Delta variant. So I think it's a very real concern about how Dune is going to fare if they do have it as streaming. And I don't think it's in their best interest to stream that. And I know, like, Paquita would be happy. If we manage to work out seeing the Suicide Squad, we can work out seeing Dune. It may not be the first week of release. It may be a weekday. It may be a matinee. But I'm sure we could work it out if that's the only option. But if it's streaming, we're just going to fucking stream it. And especially if we're streaming it for without any bonus expense. Although, if we're willing to spend $30 for the two of us to watch Black Widow, which isn't that much different than seeing it in the theater anyway, we would certainly be willing to spend $30 on Dune. But if they're going to just give it to us, fuck it, I'll take it. I'm not going to... Yeah. I don't feel like some moral obligation to pay for your Dune movie. So, if you make that choice, that's your business decision. And I'm going to, make a choice based on what works for me, which is give me that shit for free.
Yes.
And safety in my own home where we can eat our popcorn and take off our mask and eat our popcorn. Paquita was bummed out majorly that we're sitting through a movie and she can't take her mask off and eat popcorn. That was a big detraction of the whole appeal for her.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of wonder what's the point then, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that I know it's a kind of, people don't think about that, but that's part of my hesitation and maybe yours too. I don't know. Maybe not. Well, but with even going to like shows and stuff, because it's like, how are you supposed to have fun?
I enjoy the cinema experience. I enjoy being forced to watch a movie from beginning to end without any pauses or bathroom breaks or any of that bullshit. I enjoy sometimes seeing a movie with an audience. Too often with these movies, the audience, at least one or two members, are complete fucking loser idiots who damage the viewing experience. That's unfortunate. Some movies very much benefit from a group setting, like something like the Jackass movie when that comes out. That's a perfect movie to see in a theater with a bunch of other jerks who are going to be laughing their ass off at heinous bullshit. Definitely not something to take the girlfriend to because she will not appreciate that at all, especially if there's literal shit involved. But I'm not going to see that shit in the movie theater because I can't have that experience, especially can't have it safely. So it'll get watched on streaming or it won't get watched at all anytime soon. That's a drag. I definitely would want to do that as a communal activity, but not enough people do what they're supposed to fucking do. So I gotta, watch out for me and mine. I'm vaccinated, but that's not a guarantee. And, I've known people who've gotten COVID, and thankfully I don't know anybody that's had long COVID, but I'm a candidate for that shit. And I don't want to have a brain fog for an indefinite period of time. I don't want to fucking lose my hair and shit. I'm not, it's just not worth it to me. You even risk it getting a little bit. Thankfully the vaccine is supposed to mitigate a lot of that stuff and minimize how much impact it has if you do get it. But I don't want anything to do with it. It's a point of pride for me that I managed not to get it. And I want to keep up that streak. That's more important to me than virtually anything else.
Yeah.
Except for seeing Tom Savini and Ken Foree and the thought of them dying before I get the chance to see them. But, we'll see what that, we'll see what ends up happening. I'm still up in the air on that one. Even as much as I'm passionate about doing it, I'm still wary. But I feel like, you know, if I get a hotel room and I stay away for most of Saturday and just like peek in like on some of the lighter days, then it's something I can still pull off. But we'll see what happens. We'll see where we're at in September. Man, yeah. And that's one of the things that kills too, is like we all think we can make some kind of plans, and then 2 weeks later everything's fucking different, so who the fuck even knows. But I haven't paid for a hotel room yet, so that tells you right there.
That's why I was kind of like, well, this thing that I'm going to is 30 minutes away, so if everything goes pear-shaped, I mean, it's like, you know, so be it, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's funny to me because I felt like I was already sort of committed to that Dragon Con thing like 2 years ago, and it's like I guess stupidly I rolled it over into this year, but I'm, you know, assuredly not going, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so it's just like, okay, whatever, you know, like it's just like, you know, one of those things where either I, you know, I don't know if I can. You know what's funny is after all that, I don't think they mailed me anything. And I'm just kind of like, well, shouldn't I still be? I mean, I know I'm not going, but do they know I'm not going? Because they haven't mailed me anything. And I'm like, I can't. I'm like, part of it in the back of my head, I'm like, I know I can't get a refund on it, but maybe I could, you know, I don't know, sell it to somebody or transfer it or somebody that actually wants to use it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I haven't heard anything about that. So I'm just kind of content to eat whatever money I spend on it and call it a day. But I mean, there's this thing I'm going to in San Jose. I guess, I mean, they've announced like the last I think it was the last con I went to, the last con I went to before this all started was in January, and it was in Stockton, and they're doing that again in the middle of September. Like that was also announced. So I'm like, you know, that's one of those things where I was like, I could go to that. But for right now, there's not. Well, these days I gauge my draw by like, do people respond to me? Because when I looked into getting something from Liam, I wanted to make sure it was possible, right? Like, so I started sending out feelers to like different reps and people that knew him or repped him or whatever. And eventually I got directed to the right place. And then I think maybe it's his like girlfriend or wife or somebody, but somebody responded to me. It was basically like, yeah, we can do that. Like, you know, tell us what you want and then send the money here and blah, 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 blah. And so I took care of all that. And to me, I'm kind of like, okay, well, now I'm sort of money wise committed. Right. And, you know, to me, I figure worst case scenario, if it all goes pear shaped, well, then they can just mail it to me or something like that. You know, like, because that's, sure enough, that's happened, too, because a lot of stuff I had planned to or stuff I did get from like Ron Lim, like I was supposed to like physically go to a show, right, in like Sacramento or something and come pick it up from them, you know, at the show. But since that all got, you know, shit canned early on in 2020, like that eventually turned into like a, hey, I'll send this to you in the mail, you know, like type thing. And which, you know, is fine, right? Like, so, but I guess the point in that was the Stockton Con, most of the people that are there, I've either already gotten something from or whatever, but the person I was kind of interested in was Rags Morales was going to be there. And I've never met Rags Morales, and I don't have any art. And so I've been doing the same thing, like sending out some feelers, but so far I haven't heard diddly squat. So if I continue not to hear diddly squat, like straight into September, that may give me the incentive like not to bother, you know what I mean? But if it's a case like with Liam Sharp where I do hear something, then maybe I'll go check it out. I don't know.
Well, it's like with Heroes Con, I still have some regret because I got so fixated on getting my jam done at the con that I felt like I neglected the company. And so I didn't want that to happen at Dragon Con, but at the same time, that's such a fucking smorgasbord of artists that I knew I was going to have a little better balance, but I was still going to be going after some artwork. And of course, not trying to get a jam and move a single piece from artist to artist, I would have had a lot more leeway to just go, here's the board, I'll come back on Sunday, you know, that kind of shit. Seeing who was going to be at Dragon Con this year was about as depressing as seeing who was at Comic Palooza this year. So I knew that was terrible. I was really bummed out because I was looking forward, particularly I wanted to, you know, I was going to go there with Fix It and get a hotel room, and we finally do the Dragon Con experience. And obviously that's fucked this year. It's probably going to be fucked next year too. So it's like all this stuff that I was looking forward to, and I'd have taken that week off everything. And of course that week came and went, and I just stayed home. You know, what a fucking drag that shit was. You know, I'll just keep the time off. Boop-a-doop-doo. That's a real bummer.
I did the same thing.
I will say this. I'm really glad I didn't get the hotel room booked, you know, well in advance. Like, some folks were just, like, kind of fucked, essentially, and struggled to get their money back when they got partial refunds, which is some bullshit, you know, because that's so far beyond your control for that shit to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was really looking forward to Dragon Con. It was going to be a lot of fun. And again, I took the time off and looking forward to making that a con that was just as much about hanging out with people as it was about getting artists that I'd never gotten stuff from before and was really looking forward to. I will say I've got a Rags Morales piece. I got him to draw Fran from Dawn of the Dead to have the actress sign that when I would eventually get to the convention in Pennsylvania. It's a nice piece. The only thing that bugs me is he doesn't ink his stuff. It's all in pencil. And sometimes I want to have a little more definition than the pencil allows for. So and I've had some good experience with inking and some bad experience with inking. So even on the Dawn of the Dead project specifically, I had a really bad experience with inking. Just completely fucked up piece of mine. And then it got even more fucked up when I tried to get somebody to paint over it and they also fucked up. So it's completely unrecognizable and looks like an absolute turd, and I don't think I'll ever show it to the actual actor. It turned out so bad.
It's too bad. Like the things I've learned lately is, I mean, especially with the, you know, the pandemic nature of things, I mean, I've done a lot of, pencils, blue linings, and then digital colors. And it's like that, you know, I know in some sense, initially, I was either hesitant or didn't fully understand the process, but I mean, at bare minimum, I think now, like, if I get something from somebody in pencil and I entertain the idea of getting it inked, it's just going to be a scan, and it's just going to be, can you blue line, you know, ink this or whatever, and then that's I think all I'll consider, because I think I'll want to preserve the pencils one way or the other, because now I have plenty of things that are just, you know, pencils, you know, and then inks from a scan or a blue line, and then you know, if I want to print out something in color, you know, that's digitally colored, I can. I mean, I'd still get what you're doing too, because I'd appreciate the idea of like taking something from start to finish, right? But then sometimes because of those, you know, fuck ups. Right, you're like well, if it is a fuck up, at least it's a, you know, a copy of a fuck up, right? Like, so it's not the actual original thing.
Yeah, well, it's like, okay, so as far as inking goes, I had a piece, and I love, but even at that point, he wasn't where he used to be, and I've seen him continue to decline since then. And so I ultimately got to ink it, and it definitely brought the piece to completion in a way that the original art didn't, but was so overwhelming that there was too much of his style over, and it bothered me a little bit, but I thought he did a good job. In the case of what had happened is that was at Terrificon, and so it was, I was only going to be there for one day, and he didn't charge me a ton of money, and I gave him reference, and he lost the reference of the actor. And so at the very least, you'd think, okay, well, at least retain the core of the artwork, but instead he just completely fucking butchered it. I'd have given him the $100 just to not fucking touch it if I knew what he was going to do to it. But once he had done it, it was just like, oh my god, this is terrible. But the same show, I had gotten a Tom Savini piece by Kyle Hotz, and it was great. But the problem is, it was in pencil, and Kyle Hotz just doesn't look right unless you've got those rich, dark inks. So at the same show, I got Brett Breeding to ink it, and it was perfect. The only changes he made were to make it even look even more like what you'd expect Kyle Hotz to look like than Kyle Hotz himself had done. So, and for me, you know, I know it's a risk, and I've gotten burned by it, but for me, I want the one piece of artwork, and I want to see it got to completion. So if you ink it on anything but the original board, then all I've got is this potential artwork, and then a copy of that potential artwork that's, you know, a variation on the theme. I don't have the complete piece, because this is you doing a copy of it, and then this is the original, and it's not inked yet, you know? It just nags at me. And I think you're right, and I think that you're doing the smart thing, but my own compulsions don't allow me to do that same thing. And if it works like it did with Breeding, then it's absolutely worth it. But
yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, I mean, just like with, you know, I think I told you about that. fucked me because I like to pay my artists in advance because I don't want to worry about keeping up with how much money I've got in my pocket and who I owe money to. I don't want to go to an ATM and I just don't like owing somebody something. I want you to have the money and then do your part, do the artwork. And whether it's good or not, I don't want to tip you. I'm giving you what you're asking for. If you want $250, I'll pay you the $250. You've got it in your pocket. You shouldn't expect any more from me. I expect a finished piece from you. And what fucking pissed me off is it'd be one thing if he forgot the $250, which I'm the kind of person, I'm not going to forget $250. If I owe it to you or if you owe it to me, I ain't ever going to fucking forget that shit. That's just too much money to be fucking loosey-goosey with. But not only did he fuck me because I paid him in advance like I usually do, and my girlfriend was with me and she's got a fucking steel trap for shit, especially when it comes to money, so she knows I fucking paid him. But then his fucking buddy, what's his fucking... his fucking clone, right? So then his fucking clone decides to chime in. It's like, well, no. I'm sure you didn't give him the money. He would remember, and I would remember. You didn't give him the money. It's like, fucking, I didn't ask you a fucking thing. And the funny thing is, I would have been happy to get a piece from him, too. I like his style well enough. You know, he's light, but he does a nice enough work. But the fact he fucking chimed in something it was never his fucking business in the first place, and he's fucking wrong about it, because I know how much fucking money I got going to the show. I know how I fucking handle my business. I know I fucking pay my artists in advance if they'll take it. Clearly was able to take it and forget it and take it a fucking again. So I paid $500 for a $250 piece, never getting anything from either one of those motherfuckers. So just wanted to vent while I had the opportunity, because I won't release that or anything. But don't fucking give any fucking money until you got a fucking finished piece or get a fucking receipt, motherfucker. And the funny thing is, I'd have paid $500 for a piece because I wanted it, and because, again, he drew. And I don't know if you've ever tried to get somebody to draw black people, but not all artists can do that shit. And that's been proven to me, you know, because I've gotten multiple pieces that I don't fucking like and do not capture his likeness well at all. And I knew that could pull it off in part because he could draw, look like a black man, and it didn't look like a caricature, or it didn't look like a white man that has been shaded. It looked like a black man. The fact that he asked me for $250 and then charged me $500, I ain't ever forgetting that shit. Oh, the other thing I was going to tell you is, I think you liked it. You saw the Justice League Extreme piece, right? Didn't you like that, or reprinted it or something?
Yeah, that was sweet.
For all those figures in full color, and I haven't actually put out the final version because he still had flats in the background that he hadn't finished. He still was doing touch-up stuff. I ended up giving him $50 as a tip because it's different when it's online and also when the guy just does so much, you know, work. It was easily, that was $500 worth of work. You know, he's not anybody who's known, but seeing what he did, yes, I'm going to fucking have to tip that shit because he undercharged me. Simple as that. So if you're looking for something economical and you're okay with all digital artwork, which is something I'd never done before, but I wanted the piece and I didn't feel the need to have the physical artwork, I got a great deal by going through this fella and him not being known and him knowing that it's all digital, so he gets a comfortable time frame to get it done in, and he can do some digital stuff that saves him a lot of trouble. Obviously that's easier than doing pen and ink and actually hand coloring all that kind of shit. So if you got like a cool project like that where you got a ton of characters, he did a great job for a great price, so I would definitely recommend that. But you know, I think he could still produce a piece for you, a physical piece if you wanted it. But the whole reason why I did that was because I didn't want to give somebody my home address. You know how I'm paranoid. So it's like, okay, this, I'm going to finally experience digital, which I never had done before. I you know, in part because when you put money out there, you kind of want to have something tangible in the end. But I didn't need this to be tangible, and I was super happy with it. And I think I'm going to get a few more digital pieces because it's stuff that I want to see realized, regardless of whether or not there's a physical piece of artwork to own. Having it done to specifications, and in particular, I didn't have to give the guy a lot of information. He understood what I wanted without me having to fucking hold his hand and walk him through it. So obviously he's a knowledgeable fan as well, or he just was, you know, listened and understood directions very well. So if you ever want to do a project like that, his name's Brad Green. I highly recommend him because I can't believe what he was able to do for me with that level of specificity, with all those weird little tweaks I had him do to match my fucking stupid fanfic resuscitation blurb for one of Siskoid's blogs. For him to have gotten that much work done in that time frame of that quality, of that level of detail, and I just can't say sing his praises enough. I highly recommend the guy.
Did you go through Twitter when you did it, or did you go through Instagram?
There's a site called, I think, Comic Art Commissions.
Okay.
They don't have a huge selection of artists, but what was interesting is I assumed that there'd be some sort of a PayPal deal where I was going to have to cut them in or something, but as far as I can tell, no. Maybe they paid to be on the site or something, but I did not interact with the site at all. I sent an email to the gentleman, and then from there on, we were going back and forth through our private emails, and I paid him directly. I didn't have to deal with any site, and I don't have to worry about any site having my information. I just had PayPal send the money and told them, you don't need my address because there's no physical artwork, and it worked just fine. So, and that's another thing too, is in this case, he asked for half up front, so I gave him the half, and then when I saw the finished result, or he wasn't even entirely finished, but he'd done such a good job, and I was tired of having it hanging over my head, because again, I don't like owing people shit. So then I sent him the extra to finish off the balance plus the tip. I was very happy with that experience. It all worked extremely well. So I just couldn't recommend the guy enough. Now, the next guy might be a total fuck up and fuck me over and rip me off. I don't know. You know, that's always you roll those dice when you get these commissions. You know as well as I do. But in the case of this one fella, I definitely want to get some more stuff from him, and I couldn't recommend him enough to other people.
Cool.
I like that fucker. And I know you got a... How was your interaction with him?
I went through a guy. So, mm-hmm. I talked to him, I think, maybe once, and he referred me to, you know, his rep or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I just went through that rep guy. So... horror thing is in September.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, I would love to get another Dawn of the Dead podcast out, but like literally like I'd forgotten about the Suicide Squad coming out in August. So, okay. And then we were having to do a podcast for that. It ends up going to be two podcasts. I'm trying to get the extraneous material out this week before the weekend at least. But I know
we did extra handbook stuff because we might talked have about like Baron Zemo and
Zemo was in the hotel room if I recall correctly.
Okay. What was the one where we talked about Steve Gerber's stupid alien guys from Starhawk? Like, that was on
Star. Oh, okay. Yeah, that might have been a bonus one. Yeah, because I know we didn't do any of the alien shit
in the hotel
room. But I know most of the key ones we did with Mac that night.
Okay. But yeah, that one for sure was on Skype, I think.
Yeah, because I've literally been sitting on that for years, and it'll be at least another 6 months plus before any of it. She's the light of day again. But it's going to happen. It's not dead. It's just
an extended I don't care. I'm still going to like Ghost Rider 7 years from now, whenever you decide to release it. So
yeah, it's funny because like one person in particular, Angela from Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace, I recorded with her, and then of course there was a lapse between recording with her and starting to release the episodes, so she recorded addendums for several of her entries, not realizing there was probably going to be another several years before any of that shit came about. And it's like I didn't want to say anything, but it's like, sweetheart, I really wish you hadn't done that, because this is not going to be a timely thing. No matter what you do, this is not going to be a timely thing. Even when I was knocking them out every 3 weeks or so, it still was going to take forever to get to Howard the Duck, you know, much less some of these Z people and shit. So yeah, and that was before I decided to take an extended COVID break. So poor thing. I'm so sorry. That's guilt. But hey, at least I'll get to plug the addendum in there too. Or I'll save it for the fucking deluxe edition in 17 years.
I don't know. Like, if people are still waiting on a History of Comics on film video, it's going to be a fucking while. Because it's kind of like what you were saying with the what did you call it? Like, you were getting into the I can't even remember how you put it, but you know, the way you do the Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, the mission shows. Creep.
Mission creep. Yeah, I must have extensive mission creep because I it's like and I feel like I have to be in the zone to want to do mission creep. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Oh,
like, because like I think 3 weeks ago was when I looked up that stuff for this show, you know, those little articles and things I was putting together. But then of course at some point between that 3 weeks and now, my computer crashed, so all those windows I had open where I was going through stuff and looking through, like, you know, old scans of comic scene and bullshit that I was trying to pull those interviews from, like, then at that point I'm like, oh well, well, my mental map of what I was intending to do, I lost it all, right? Like, so it's like, it's hard to get back into that zone, mm-hmm. too, sometimes, because I was, you know, like, I take like 3 week breaks in between mission creep, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where it's like, I think a couple weeks back, I did a whole shit ton of like reading and research on fucking Magia fucking idiots, because mm-hmm. they're all in this Spider-Man cartoon. Mm-hmm. And then before that, I did like this month long binge into Namorita. But like now, I'm like, I'm going to have to get into that zone again and do like Kazar and a bunch of, you know, so it's like, right. I don't know. And I always feel like if I don't take the time to do that, then I'm going to be unhappy with, you know, like if I just sort of half-ass Kazar, I feel like, well, that's not fair. Like, that's not cool. Like, I can't.
Well, but also it's somewhat Sisyphean, because when you're in the early stages of History of Comic Con film and you're doing a coverage of the Black Hawk serial, well, you're not going to go and read 200 issues of Black Hawk to get completely freshed up on there. You're going to read the Wikipedia entry. You're going to read some odds and sods, you know, and give an overview of it. And then you're going to be satisfied, because there's only so much interest in Black Hawk, the aviation hero of World War II in the modern era. There's only so many Spy Smasher comic books in existence. So even if you read Spy Smasher, you could still cover it within the span of a video, because there's just only so much to delve into. Where once you get into Spider-Man, you're getting the Magia, and you're getting into stuff that ties into things, characters that have decades of lore and then have devoted fan bases and knowledgeable fan bases. And you don't want to be the asshole, a dilettante interloper who's trying to bullshit his way through something where the audience already knows as much or more than you, unless you do the work. It's going to be much more challenging.
Yeah. Well, and that doesn't stop people from making pithy, nasty ass comments one way or the other, whether you do the research or not.
You make the video then, motherfucker.
Yeah, I know. It's like the best thing about that is people that make those comments, you click on their accounts and it's like zero videos, hasn't made shit. Like, you know, I'm just kind of like, are you serious? You're going to talk shit? You don't even have your own video? Come on.
Well, I can't say too much shit, because I'm constantly trashing movies and comic books, and I don't make any movies or comic books. So it's like, okay, you know, easier said than done. And like the whole Siskoid Who's Editing thing, I have so much more empathy for George R. R. Martin now, because I'll go, like you said, I'll go in and I'll do like a heavy duty research, and I'll go down a rabbit hole and find out all this weird ephemera and shit, and I'll plug that into one of those little blurbs, and then months later I go back and I'm looking at what I was doing and trying to figure out what direction it was going in and what I was referencing, and I don't even get my own fucking references, because it's not even comic books I read, it's, you know, materials based on comic books that somebody else read. And so it's like, what the fuck was I been doing with that? What was I referencing there? Where was this fucking going? And you know, even stuff that where it's me coming up with the thing, I'll forget, like I'll lose the thread, because it's been months later and I've done this 9 other things since then and I don't even know what the fuck's going on. So yeah, I definitely have a little bit more empathy for you know, writers that kind of get off track, or they never resolve this thing they set up, and you think that, well, why wouldn't you do that? It's right there. It's like, well, because you have 9 other things you're fucking doing and you're trying to make a fucking living, and it doesn't mean as much to you as the person who's generating it as it does as the person who's receiving it. Or in my case, it's the fact that literally there is no audience for this. I'm entirely doing it for myself. I'm essentially just doing graffiti on Siskoid's comment board for myself only. It's completely onanistic. But yeah, I have a great appreciation for how shit can just go awry very easily, especially the more complicated you make things.
Oh, and then you get distracted by squirrels and all that other stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Well, I think I've hit my
the wall.
I think I've hit my wall with just not with you, but with
no.
You know, I gotta wake up tomorrow.
I don't take that personally. For starters, if nothing else, the bathroom break that we've both been deferring has probably caught up with our poor aged bladders. but given that it's been over a year since the last time we talked, you know, we're both committed to, you know, taking advantage of the time while we have it. But we also both know that we got to do this again in a month. So I enjoyed it. It's great, and I'm happy to come out of my shell and actually talk to folks I enjoy talking to again. And it's always fun to do one of these long ass marathons with somebody who can keep up with it and has the same, you know, shared experiences and shit. So, you know, as always, it's a blast. I'm looking forward to it again next month.
Cool.
So Derek William Crabb, who featured in this episode, promoted the heavy metal episode across Facebook and Twitter via his personal account, Fanholes Podcast, and History of Comics on Film. In 2019, he produced a video in the History of Comics on Film series devoted to the heavy metal movie and related comics. I was listening to it while I was gathering the social media, and I do recommend it. Other folks who promoted the 40th anniversary heavy metal episode include Andre TFG, Dr. Ange, Baby Skeletor, The Bat Pod, Canoes Added Thanks, Carlos Fope, Chris at Bat Books for Beginners, Chris Dunford, Chris Leiden, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, Dear Watchers, a Marvel What If podcast, Del Dracula, Doc Strange, Ed Moore, Gregory Litchfield, The Hammer Strikes, Geeky Stuff and Voiceover, Hernan Jax, Iowa's Joe Crawford, It's Plastic Man, Jeffrey Brown, They Them, Jenna Reagan, Keith G. Baker, Ken Yama 65, Kerry Kemp, King Dinosaur, King Size Comics, Giant Size Fun Podcast, Long Box of Darkness, Lucretia, Lukashin Sergey, Mark Thomas, Martin Gray, Max Reads Comics, Mike at Send Aliens to Me, Nick David, P. Period, Photo Druid Dusseldorf, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections, and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Rob Klippel, Samilla, Scott X, Tim Price, The Pod Crasher, Voices Cloud, and Zoran Ryder. Added, wow. Chris Dunford wrote, 40 years ago, man, did I get hit by the old man stick. Martin Gray wrote, I've never read an issue. I did see the movie, though. The Mag's prog rock album cover and big boobies aesthetic never appealed, but I'm sure the chat is delightful. Jeffy Brown wrote, I have never read heavy metal, but I have definitely seen the animated movie on DVD. I have listened to a lot of podcasts talking about the movie. I did try submitting art and comics I have made to get published in heavy metal, but I think I got rejected a few times. Finally, Cal Binning wrote, great episode. Love the movie, love the comic magazine, and absolutely love the soundtrack. Great stories, great art, great voice actors. What a fantastic time capsule of late 70s and early 80s sci-fi and fantasy fiction and pop culture.
I'm Derek, Derek WC. You know, listen to HFCOF.blogspot.com and Fanholes Podcast.blogspot.com.